Right now, we're starting a conversation about a mother's worry for her son. We start with this piece from Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Carl Christensen.
There are parents in Wisconsin who fear for the future of their black sons. That's no different for storyteller Tequila Benton of Madison, who wishes others would see her son as they see their own children. She shared this story live in 2014. It contains language that may be offensive to listeners.
Last night, I held my son while he slept. I couldn't bear to put him into his own bed. I squeezed him tightly and tried not to cry too loudly as I kissed his caramel-colored forehead. My silly, adorable little guy. Like all little boys his age, he's obsessed with Minecraft and superheroes. His default speed is somehow turbo all the time. And any sound produced by a bodily function induces uncontrollable laughter. He sings when he's in a good mood and once told me that fried cheese curds are so delicious they should be Madison's official food. He's got a knack for annoying his older sister, and if I let him every day and to bed, he would wear a suit and full tie. And I'm terrified for his life. Not the normal maternal worry about chipped teeth, scraped knees, and sports-related injuries. No. I harbor deep-seated anxiety and gut-wrenching fear for the statistically inevitable outcome of his future, imprisonment or death. Some days I'm emotionally catatonic because I don't have enough courage. I don't have enough courage to raise a black man. I tell myself he'll be different. I'll raise him better. I'll learn from other mothers' mistakes and give him every opportunity for success. But I know nothing that I do, nothing I teach him, no opportunity awarded or future I map out for him, not a damn thing can guarantee that he will live a long life free of handcuffs or a coffin. In a society where he doesn't have any value unless he's holding a ball or a mic, this sweet little boy who loves karate, I try to teach him to work hard now so you can play harder later. Make decisions that you can be proud of. Speak up now, don't mumble. Say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, to everyone. Hold the door for women and elderly folk. Tell the truth and keep your promises. My promise is to keep you safe and try my best to protect you from the hate. Don't be late. Keep your hands out of your pocket. Smile, be polite, but don't let people push you around. Always stay in control of your emotions. I know, it's not fair that you get in trouble at school for doing the same thing the little boy did, but your actions are different. You're different. You always will be. It's not fair, but you have to be better than everyone else because you get noticed more. Say please and thank you. Don't sag your pants or hang out with folks that make bad decisions. Just because that song is popular and everybody is singing it, I do not want to hear you saying it. Speak proper English. Who cares if they say you talk white? That enunciation and use of verbs may one day save your life. What good will any of this do if he's deemed a thug or threat? Punished more severely for the same mistakes. Can I really protect him, my dimple little cheek guy, from all the hate? How do I teach him to value his life in a society where his life seems so valueless? How do I teach him individuality and to be accountable for his actions when his mere presence evokes the stereotypical mass panic and paranoia that pushes the plague of imprisonment and poaching of black men into extinction? Perhaps the ASPCA should protect our black men instead of the NAACP. I tried to explain the pain to a 7-year-old, the movement behind Black Lives Matter. Teach him that he matters, and so do so many others that we'll never know. Because in their veins flow the perseverance and power of those dauntless ancestors who endure the torture and turbulent times, sacrificing their lives and enduring pain so that it would not be mine or his. I teach him to honor the sacrifices that others made for future generations of black kids that they'll never know. I want to teach my quirky little guy who loves Doctor Who individuality and pride, but his survival may very well depend on how well he is able to hide. His manhood, see, the idea of a black man that is non-threatening, who isn't viewed as a thug or a nigger, is a lie. I want to protect my funny, sweet, adorable little guy, but the powerlessness dwindles my hopes for humanity. For his tiny shoulders, all of this may be too heavy. I just want everyone to always see him the way I do and take care of him like he is their son, too. To see him with all the pride and promise, not the stereotypes and lies. I want to hold him and protect him from the world, because the thought of holding his dead body and having to bury him in a suit and tie he loves so much causes my soul to splinter and bleed through my pores. I just can't watch the news anymore. I will just sit here with him and hold my little guy for all the black mothers who too soon had to say goodbye. Thank you.
Tequila Benton's story came to us from the podcast Inside Stories, which features Madison storytellers and digs deeper into their lives. She's the co-host of the podcast and originally shared the story in 2014 at a Listen to Your Mother event. I feel constantly right. If life is bad, it won't be kind. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Carl Christensen.
This is Central Time. Next up, we're talking with Tequila Benton about what's happened in these past 6 years. Our conversation is just ahead here on the Ideas Network. You are listening to Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. We just heard a story that Tequila Benton told 6 years ago about her worries for her son. She's a mother, transformative healer, writer, activist, and lover of all things black. She says that she wants the world to understand love matters and black lives matter always. She joins us now. Tequila, thanks for being with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me on today.
We just heard your story about, as you put it, your sweet little boy and your fear. What's changed?
Not very much. I mean, he's a much bigger, sweet little boy. He's taller than me now, and he's facing the world, kind of navigating his own way through. So it's more in-depth conversations and him exploring his personality and the world around him. And so we're just trying to find our way through that.
How did you change the way you talk to him from when he was a fan of Minecraft and superheroes until now? I mean, those things may still be true, but right, he's a different, older person.
Right. The language, just like I said, has gotten more frank and, to be honest, transparent, as social media is a bigger thing in his life. He's able to view some of these things that I was able to shield him from when he was younger. So he has his own questions and his own analysis of what things should be and how things really went down. So, you know, there's definitely some more grown-up conversations going on. And Minecraft has switched to Fortnite, like most kids. So, I mean, superheroes are still a thing in the house. So same kind of conversations go on.
Yeah. What led you to share that very personal story about your fears those 6 years ago?
That was around the time I believe Trayvon Martin had got killed, and it was all over the news, as well as some other incidents of similar tragedy. And so working with Listen to Your Mother, I just needed to kind of get it out. And so I had already been working on little tips for him here and there on sticky notes and on my phone, just things that to remember to talk to him about as he gets older, or stories I've heard from other mothers. Just things I wanted to say to him. So I kind of compiled as much as I could into a audience-friendly story, and just kind of wanted to tell that story. And in fact, I still actually add to that poem even to this day as things continue to occur in the world.
You add to the poem. It just extends.
Mm-hmm. it just continues to go on and on.
What kind of response did you get from people?
It was a very warm welcome. A lot of folks in the audience, and actually my son was in the audience that day, hugged him and me and kind of expressed their regret and sorrow and things that they wanted to do differently going forward after hearing the piece. It's been shared a whole lot around, and it's also been things that I was able to discuss not only with Langston, but also with, you know, officials at his school or other parents who had similar worries and they just didn't know how to voice their concern or they thought it was just them. And so it opened up a lot of dialogue, more so for people who don't have kids of color and haven't really thought about those are the tragedies we have to face when we parent and all the obstacles that we have that they don't even consider for their own kids.
And how important is that perspective now that we're living in a time where there's this important and long overdue conversation about race happening?
It's vital right now, especially for them to be open and transparent. A friend of mine said to me the other day that as a Black man, it's a super struggle because, you know, you could be killed in your house. You could be killed jogging, traffic stop in a Walmart. And it's kind of like, well, what do they want from me? Do they want me to live or do they want my life? So just for them to understand, and these are people around the world, just, you know, that there's humanity that's being lost. And so those conversations need to be had about how desensitized we are to the murders of Black people in America and how we just somehow need to find some understanding and have these conversations without feelings being involved that shut all conversation down.
Tequila Benton is here sharing her story. She's co-host of the Inside Stories podcast. And I want to also welcome Jen Rubin now. Jen co-produces the Moth Story Slam in Madison and is the author of We Are Staying, 80 Years in the Life of a Family, a Store, and a Neighborhood. Jen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You've helped hundreds of people tell their own stories, whether through the Moth Story Slam or workshops that you teach. Why is that a passion for you?
I think that storytelling has a way of amplifying voices and can lower fences in our community. And so one of the things, you know, when Tequila and I came up with this idea of doing Inside Stories podcast is that, you know, there's just a variety of life stories across Madison. And if we could share them, it has the potential to deepen connections kind of within and between communities. And so that's kind of the, you know, kind of the idea behind sharing other people's stories.
And you also told the story of your own family and its business in your book. How does your experience shape encouraging other people to be brave and talk about the things in their life?
I think, you know, we all have so many stories within us. And so, you know, figuring out how to tell the story the way you want to tell it. And what I, you know, I like to spend time with when I, you know, do workshops or talk with people is how do you sort of share the context around the story? You know, Tequila's story, if we didn't understand the context of what's happening with, you know, how many Black men are being killed by cops, like, you know, without understanding that context, you know, then the story isn't as powerful. Can I say something about Tequila's story? Is that all right?
Absolutely.
So one thing, you know, I think for people listening who haven't thought a lot about sort of the care and craft that it takes to tell as impactful a story as Tequila's told. You know, lots of people have wanted to hear her story. And she and I talked about this in our podcast, that she very much crafted it with a white audience in mind. So we can feel the pain and anxiety of Black parents sending their Black sons out into the world, knowing the world might see them with suspicion. So the way she started it with the shared humanity of experiences of all young boys, so for the white audience can think, oh, my kid is like that, my grandkid is like that. But then she pivots to how it's different for Black parents. I just think there's just a lot of craft that she put into that to make it such an impactful story.
Yeah.
Well, Tequila. Thank you, Jen.
You're welcome, Tequila.
Share the love. Tequila, I think there's something to that, though, that's striking for me, too, because you don't have to explain that experience to other Black parents of Black children. They know it. So when you were doing this, you were thinking about trying to teach white people?
Exactly. Jen is exactly right. Yep. Because most of the audience at the Listen to Your Mother show were definitely not people of color. And so I didn't want to specifically tailor it from my experience. I needed to connect. And that's the central theme of story, is finding those threads to connect us all so that we all kind of are along for the ride on the emotion that's in your story, and we feel it from your perspective. And that's the hugest impact that story can make, is just to connect us and make me feel what you feel and vice versa.
How do you balance, though, the idea that you shouldn't have to teach other people about your default existence with wanting them to know and wanting them to understand?
There honestly is no balance. The reality is that's where we are. Like I said, there's a disconnect between understanding the humanity and the struggle of Black people. And so just knowing that that is a reality is really more of getting to a point where I can understand others to help them understand me. And just approaching it from that perspective and just doing the best that I can to use the words and to craft the story and emotion to kind of touch you in a place where I can't help but to keep your attention until my very last word.
You two co-host the Inside Stories podcast. Tequila, where did this come from? What's it about?
Well, Inside Stories, as Jen said, kind of explores Madison one story at a time via the live storytelling venues we have here, which obviously are going on right now. So we've taken it to kind of accepting stories and doing it from our homes. But we just wanted to sit down with the storytellers and just what Jen did, kind of deconstruct the story and how it's done and why, and ask them more in-depth questions about, you know, why did you use that scenario or these emotions, and break down story for those who are interested in telling their own story so they can kind of get a little bit of education and entertainment.
And what kind of storytellers do you talk with, Tequila?
All different types. Ones who've done stories at the Odyssey workshops Jen and I co-facilitate, as well as The Moth or Listen to Your Mother. So they range from stories about a vet to stories about a Black man being a teacher, or someone surviving the Holocaust, or children's dying, or, you know, someone coming out. It's just a variety of amazing stories that we get. We're super lucky to have those.
Jen,
sorry.
No, please go ahead.
So we share the stories that we think are some of the greater stories that we've heard. And I think part of what makes a story really stick with people and resonate is, even if it's not your experience, there's some sort of universal thread to the story. So even if you didn't visit a sibling in prison, or you didn't cross the Mexican border, or you didn't have a child who died of cancer, there's something about how they put together the story that it really speaks to people, both because they're interested in that story, but they can see something of themselves in that story. And so we really make a point of bringing in the stories that we feel like does that and sort of gives people a lot to think about.
And Jen, what if someone wants to share their story, but they really don't know how to go about it? Where do you encourage them to start?
Well, they could contact us at Inside Stories Podcast at gmail.com, because we're often doing workshops. But, you know, workshops are super helpful. You know, if you're in the Milwaukee area, Exfabula does a lot of workshops. I'm sure in other parts of the state, people are doing workshops. And that just really helps you figure out, well, what story do I want to tell? And then how do I want to tell it? Because I hear that at The Moth all the time, where people really want to tell a story, but they're afraid to do it. And so taking a workshop or reading about, you know, what's a good element to telling a story, is just useful.
And Tequila, what would you say to someone who doesn't think that their life or their story is worth telling?
Oh, every story is worth telling. Every experience is. Just write it down, get it out of you, and tell it to someone that's safe, even if it's your cat or dog. I mean, just get it out of you. And once you honestly tell it on stage, and I know Jen has this experience too, is most folks are like, okay, I need to do that again. So, like, that is so freeing and cathartic when you are able to tell your story and get acceptance from people you never thought would have understood or connected or accepted it. So just get it out and email us and we can help you with it, like Jen said.
Yeah. Where do you find the bravery to take that first step and get it out, though?
Put a pen and a piece of paper together and just start writing. There's the bravery right there.
Yeah. Jen, mm-hmm. I think sometimes we can be concerned about how other people will view our stories. Obviously, we want to connect with people. We want them to understand the validity of our stories. That might not be how everyone receives it. How do we break through that fear?
Well, I think it depends upon, you know, are you putting together a story that you're going to tell, like, in front of a room of strangers? Or are you putting together a story because, you know, you want to tell a good story to your friends? Like, it sort of depends upon. What I will say, I've never been in a storytelling audience where everyone is not on your side. I mean, it's sort of yours to lose, you know, to have people not be on your side, because they know just what kind of bravery it takes to get up there the first time. I will say, like, if you're practicing a story and you feel very nervous about the story, then it probably means you haven't yet put it together how you want it. So I would just keep thinking about it, keep working on it, you know, get feedback from a friend.
Oh, interesting. So you're saying that when we get there with the stories we want to tell, even though there may be some, you know, nerves about going in front of people or something like that, if we have anxiety, there may be something to it that we could rearrange or adjust or include differently that could make it more comfortable for us.
I mean, that's my experience. Like, I always practice saying it out loud. And if I get to something where I'm like, I'm having a hard time saying this, then maybe I'm just not ready to say it, you know, or I'm not saying it the way I want to say it.
Sure. I want to thank Jen. We really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having us.
And Tequila, thanks for your willingness to share your story.
Thank you so much for sharing the story with me.
We've got Tequila Benton and Jen Rubin here, who co-host the Inside Stories podcast. Tequila is a mother, a transformative healer, a writer, activist, and lover of all things Black. And Jen Rubin wrote, "We are staying 80 years in the life of a family, a store, in a neighborhood, and a neighborhood." And we've been talking with them about storytelling and the importance of the bravery to begin, get it done, and tell your stories, because they're all important.